Now, welcome back. Loads of messages of support for Dylan and Liam, not least from iAdult themselves. Well done to Dylan and Liam from all the gang tuned in at iAdult, and delighted to give them a name check as well. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy that conference taking place Saturday week, isn't it? It is, of course. Right, okay. Dan's going to join us now to talk about smart meters. Hiya, Dan.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Still in the learning process with smart meters. What's your comment?
Well, it's my wife had the sign up on the box. No smart meter, please. And that was all right. The man was around one day a few months ago, and that was okay. So that was all right. So I looked the last day, and the smart meter's in. And I thought that, and the writing of the letter they sent out earlier in the year, that DSB would give you two hours. The DSB had to be cut off for 2 hours before they could work with the box. Mm-hmm.
So you have your reservations. You're waiting to see what the story is. You were happy with your own analog meter. You put a sign up saying, "Do not install a smart meter at my property. I don't want it." Yet lo and behold, you opened up the door, and there within lies a smart meter.
Yeah, because another woman had just happened to tell me one day in the post office. She said that the same thing happened to her. So I didn't. Mary checked it then when she came home, and behold, the girl, the meter was in there, and that was always about it. We never seen nobody at no time, and there's nearly always somebody about the house.
Do you think it's possible the smart meter was installed before you erected the sign?
No, it wasn't. No, because the meter man has been round since. Mm. He had been round the last time and checked it. Because my point is that you're doing these people out of jobs. That's number one, anyway.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. Now, I mean, we don't know what the law is in this regard, all right? So we're not making any accusations. But you feel that you've been trespassed here.
Well, have you any rights anymore? Mm-hmm. Or it's just people got the right to come in and do something on your property. Like, at least if you'd have come and said, right, we have to put it in, you know, that's the law. The ASB gives us the power to go ahead and do it. That would be a different issue. Mm-hmm. If they'd have come and said, or at least left an open saying that we have installed a meter, you know, at least done that. But they come and done it and hadn't kind of a way. They must have noticed the car wasn't on the street or something, because there'd be somebody near there always about the house at 90% of the time.
So have you made any contact with the ASB yourself? We'll inquire as to what the
rules is. No, because you just go on a... You just go on online stuff, and they'll just somebody answering, and that's just get no answers.
I get you. Right. Okay. Well, we'll contact their press office. I know they sent out a letter originally. Like, they aren't compulsory. I mean, I know that at this point they will be. Let's just not kid ourselves. They're not compulsory at this stage. Were you ever sent out a letter advising you that you were scheduled to have a smart meter installed? And did you reply to that saying, "I don't want one"?
Yeah, no, the day the man came around, we told him we didn't want one. And in that letter, it said that the ESP, the electricity had to be cut off for 2 hours. That's why they would come around and tell you that they were going to do it. They would do it the next day or so. But there was no cut, not that we know of, any electricity cut anyway. And we wouldn't be away that long from the house at any time. But because nearly everything's on electricity, no matter what you go to do.
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying. Well, listen, we'll make our inquiries, Dan, and see what the story is, and see if any other listeners had this same experience.
Yeah, just to find out who else, how many more has been. I know there's a good few down, because I was chatting to somebody else, and they said that they went to the house and they said they had the power to do it, and that was it.
All right, okay. Leave it with us, Dan. Thanks for that. Thank you very much indeed. All right, anyone else have a view on that or an experience of it? 086 60 25,000. Now, we've been asked by the Irish Blood Transfusion Service to mention that they have a number of clinics in Donegal this week. They say people have been slow to make appointments, and obviously they're very, very keen to get donors who've donated before and potential donors to get involved. If you want to, I'll tell you where they are, but if you want to get involved, 1-800-731-137. You can book an appointment or check your eligibility. You can also book online, giveblood.ie. The clinics are today, Tuesday, in Buncrana, in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel, from 2:30 p.m. to 5 p.m., 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And look, you know how important these blood banks are. And it could be any of us at any time that needs someone's blood, by the way. On Wednesday in Carndonagh in the community school from 2:30pm to 5pm or 7pm to 9:30pm. And again on Thursday in the Carndonagh Community School between 2:30pm and 6:30pm. If you would like to see if you can donate, 1800 731137 or giveblood.ie. All right, OK. So hopefully they get a good turnout because, as I say, either you or someone close to you eventually might actually need those services. Right, let me see more of your comments coming in all the while. Hi, Greg. Just to make people aware, there are two people driving a white Renault traffic van in Letterkenny today, harassing elderly and calling at houses asking to use a toilet. Please tell me you've made the Gardaí aware of that, because that's precisely the type of information that they are looking for intelligence purposes. Okay, the Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen Municipal District is Councillor Paul Canning. Canning, I beg your pardon. And Paul joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Paul. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to you and all your listeners.
It's good to have you with us. You're calling for the opening hours of Green On of Alia to be extended. I think we had a conversation with Brendan Devaney not so long ago that he was looking to bring his young family up here, and then loads of people contacted us there afterwards and found that access was limited more often than not. If I have the right tourist attraction, I'll double check that. But what are the current opening hours? What do you think needs to be done, Paul?
Yeah, the current opening hours are changing kind of every month from now until September. At the minute, our opening hours is from 10 o'clock to 5:30. And then that from the middle of May to the middle of June, it goes from 9 o'clock till 7. And then from the middle of June till the middle of August, it goes from 9 o'clock till 8:30. And then it goes back a ways again from the middle of August to the end of September. It goes from 9 o'clock till 7 and so forth. But the problem being is, like, the situation with it, this is my own word on it. The OPW do not want people visiting the Green and Fort. That's the bottom line. And as proof of that is, if you go on to the internet and go on the OPW heritage sites in Ireland and go places to visit, right, they'll come up with 92 places to visit. None of them will be Green and Avalia.
Well, that's disgraceful. That's the jewel in the crown. Now, when we talk about it being opened, and I want to tease out that OPW point with you, is it actual access to it or access to the car park?
It's the access. It's the barrier at the bottom of the road. And if you can actually walk in.
Yeah. Now, so it's disgraceful. So what it is really you are effectively, not you, sorry, I mean you in the generic sense, we're saying that, right, if you're if you're able, you can visit whenever you like, effectively, within reason. But if you happen to have a young family with you, or you have mobility issues, then you're only welcome among certain times, which I don't think is very fair.
It's not fair. It's not fair at all. And what I'm asking for is, from, because it's daylight hours, there's no reason in this world why the fort cannot be open to drive up from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock in the evening. There's no reason, because the rationale, and we have tried to have meetings with the OPW just to see why, but the rationale is they're given antisocial behaviour, littering, and just everything.
But that's not a problem in other parts of the country. We have seem to have a particular issue here in Donegal in terms of management and maintenance. You'd be laughed out of it if you went down to Kerry or some other of the tourism hotspots and some of the brilliant facilities like this weren't broadly available, you know, because obviously we as locals want to visit these places too. But can you imagine being a tourist landing here and you've got a checklist of places you want to go? This is going to be on the top of the list or very close to it. And your access to it is limited because we can't handle antisocial behaviour or whatever. I mean, it makes no sense, Paul.
No, it doesn't make sense at all, because, you know, there is no antisocial behaviour going on up there. You know, they've mentioned, you remember back a few years ago where we had the whole meeting with the OPW, and they said they were going to do a conservation management plan. And the item that was on that was graffiti, was antisocial behaviour, and stone removal, and items like that, you know, and it was all down to visitor safety, etc. You know, but, you know, what's the difference in visitor safety at 3 o'clock in the middle of the day and at 8 o'clock in the evening? Like that argument doesn't stack up. And that, I have been onto them a few times, and they were saying they're using language, as you are well aware of the fort itself, there's steps within the fort, and they're saying that they do not meet current building regulations, and if somebody fell, the insurance...
It's a historical site, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
What do they want? Barriers and rubber mats and...
Yeah, but the whole... They just don't, you know, and it's frustrating for all of the members within the Inishowen.
Right, let's get back to this OPW not wanting people to visit, that theory that you have. So you'll get, you search places to visit, you'll get 92 suggestions. This is not on it. So tease it out a bit more as to what you mean they don't want people there, or why would they not be promoting or advertising it?
Yeah, because of, it's, in my opinion, it's because of insurance reasons. They don't want to promote too many people up there. There's over 100,000 people going up to that as we speak. But if you were to go now and you go on the heritage site, you will not find, you'll find it very difficult to get Green and Avalia.
That makes no sense. I mean, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You know, if you're letting some people in, you know, you by not advertising it to limit the numbers because of insurance, but people are already in there, it's embarrassing. It's nonsensical.
That's what we're trying to tease out, but they'll not meet with us. We have requested a number of occasions. We have sent we've sent letters to the all of the ministers that was, and they've changed a couple of them, asking them, and they come back with the same rhetoric that it's their financial implications and there's health and safety issues, and we can't open it for these reasons and that reason. It does not make sense. It doesn't help the people at all. And if you were working to 6 to 5 or 6 o'clock and you wanted then in the evening to take, as you said about Brent Devaney, wanted to take the children there at one evening or the weekend, and he had to carry them. Listen, it'll do Brent no harm to do a wee bit of exercise, like, but he had to carry the youngsters from the bottom of the hill, and it's a steep climb up to the fort. And what all we're asking for is the person that's closing the barrier to just close it 3 hours later. It doesn't cost any more. And it does not make sense, because if there's anybody up there at all, surely the health and safety matters.
I'm not trying to catch you out, but just a curiosity, right? Say it closes at 6 and there's 3 cars up in the car park. Are they asked to leave before they close the gate? I mean, there surely already must be some level of flexibility there, no? I don't know really how that might work logistically, but...
There is a little level of flexibility, and that's sort of part of a local argument that if somebody's up there and it's technically it could be open longer than that to let the people out. But the barrier then would be the person would be more or less standing at the barrier, letting the people out, but letting nobody else in. Mm.
Yeah, you see, let's just say you opened it till 10 p.m. in the summer. Mm. You will also have some people that are still up there and someone so they do have to come up with a solution, because obviously it just becomes another time where you have the same kind of issues, if you know what I mean. So it does require some level of, even if it was a gate, let's say an electronic gate, right, that only opens on the way in at a certain time, and then you can drive out and it will open. Do you know what I mean? One of those sensor gates.
Yes.
You know, just a little bit of common sense.
Common sense.
And have that switched off at a certain time so it won't lift or go, do you know, and then no one has to call out there. I mean, it's 2023, right? Next year, we'll probably all be being told what to do by robots the way things are going, right? Surely we can come up with some sort of a mechanical solution to a gate so we don't have some poor person standing there holding a gate, waiting people to leave and having to tell them they can't go up. Automate it. Is there only one entrance, Paul?
Yeah, there's only one entrance.
Put one of those gates with a timer on.
Yeah, and the whole thing is wrong, but if the OPW would meet with us, we have had these discussions, but they're putting it all down. We'll wait till we do the management plan. We have the management plan done. It's done now 4 or 5 years, but they'll not come back to meet us to have this discussion. And in fairness to the Bord Fáilte and people like that, they want to promote the Greening Board, but their hands are tied because of the restrictions.
Well, it'd be Bord Fáilte, it's you guys and the council that get it in the ear. Let's face it. I mean, the OPW, what is the OPW? Where are they based? Who are they? You know, what is the face of the OPW? Do you know what I mean? And I suppose it can be a little bit like Irish Water to some extent, that, you know, how can you hold them to account when you don't really know who's making these decisions? Who is making that decision? Who decided that you can put on sort of electronic gates out at Friars, you know, in that area, for example, in the Forest, for example, but you can't do it at Green on a Valley? Do you know what I mean? Who's making these calls? They're unaccountable. Yeah,
exactly, and it's a committee that there might be at the end of the day a CEO, and we have met with a Frank Shelby, and he has said that he'll come back to us after the management plan, but he hasn't come back to us. Now, his role might have changed since, but they tend to once blaming the other and saying, well, we need to do this and we need to do that, and there's nobody actually stepping up to the plate and doing what needs to be done for the fort.
Right, okay, so where do you progress it from here? I know you're going to raise it at council meetings. I know you're talking to us about it, and I'm presume talking to the other press as well, but like what, you know, we're heading into another summer season of discontent, really, you know, whereby the full potential of one of our jewels in our crown is not being realised. Of course, there's frustration for the locals, but as I say, you know, visitors to the area, they're scratching their heads wondering, is this only here? Is it everywhere? You know what I mean? We're shooting ourselves in the foot, or should I say the OPW is shooting us in the foot. So what's the solution?
Well, we have requested yet another meeting with the OPW to come and meet the elected members of the Inishowen MD at the last MD. And at that point in time, we're starting to sort of use language to listen. At the end of the day, I know it's a private road up there, but Donegal County Council have taken over that road, and the powers that Donegal County Council have in relation to that road needs to be enacted in relation to what you're on about, your barriers, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, of course, there's no electric power at the gates of Allan Green on, but listen, you know, they built the Harry Blaney Bridge. We can get a power cable up to, you know what I'm on about. That's not insurmountable, I'm sure. And I'm not saying that's the solution, but that's the type of solution that's out there is all I'm saying, Paul.
Well, we're very, our solar panels, et cetera, now is getting well advanced. So maybe there's an avenue there as well.
Exactly. Okay. Keep us updated with any updates. That one is filed in the it doesn't make any sense category, which is filling up all the while. But hopefully a solution or resolution is found, Paul.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Take care of yourself. Thanks for taking the time out to chat to us today. 086 60 25,000. We're going to speak to Mary about a dog kill which happened at Maharoti Beach. And obviously it's a very unpleasant thing. We can't bury our heads in the sand either. But for those of you who are sensitive to this type of thing, maybe some of the descriptions of what we're about to hear might upset you. But if you are an animal lover, you'll understand that we also have to, or a farmer or someone who understands the impact this type of a kill has, then you'll understand why we have to talk about it. Mary is an owner of the sheep. Mary, thank you for joining us this morning, and I wish it was in different circumstances, but here we are.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
All right, what happened yesterday, Mary?
So basically, we would have been... we got a phone call from somebody who was actually walking on the beach, and they noticed that there was a dog that was gone through all the sheep. And for anybody that doesn't realise, Maharoti Beach and Dewey, the Dewey would be commonage, so the farmers would have their sheep there. There would be cattle there as well, and they would have grazing rights there. So the sheep are there all year round, and the cattle are there all year round. And unfortunately, even since March to now, we've lost three already. So has been really good at having signs erected, you know, informing people that dogs have to be kept on leads at all times. And unfortunately, yesterday that did not happen. So what basically happened was that the dog went through all the sheep, and these sheep would be due lambs in a few weeks as well. There are lambs there at the minute that would be a little bit bigger that would have been brought down and are ready to graze there. So the dog would have scattered all the sheep. He would have driven sheep out onto the water. Mm-hmm. We have 5 missing at the minute. He drove the sheep, and you can imagine at this time of the year, you know, they have their woolen coats, and he drove the sheep out onto the water, and with the weight of the seawater and on their coats, the sheep would not be able to get back in again. And that would be the difficulty there. So the owner obviously was observing all of this. The owner
of the dog
went towards the went towards the dog and pulled the dog off while he was killing one of the sheep. So last night, one of those bodies came in. We collected it off at the point. If anybody knows the area, they'll know that area. So it washed in at the point. So that sheep in particular, his mouth and his neck was pulled out of him. And that sheep would have had a lamb. So we're still missing 5. The sheep are obviously terrified at this stage, and they won't. These would be sheep we would have had like generations down of parents and parents of theirs. And the sheep are very friendly. They would just come to you when they see you coming. But at this stage, you know, they're all terrified. So
of the missing sheep and the sheep that are currently obviously so afraid, were they with lamb as well? Or do you know? Obviously, it can be hard to keep track of everything, but I presume you have.
So there would be, our missing sheep would be with lamb. Now we did, obviously the dog had jumped on one of the baby lambs. Now this baby lamb was about 4 weeks old now and just snapped its spine. So it died. Last night we found another sheep that the dog had pulled the wool and ate the back end out of the back of the sheep. And my difficulty thinking logically is the humane aspect of what those sheep had to go through and bore witness to, and the pain of the death that they had by being mauled by a dog. And that owner, if he's listening today, I hope he is, if he's listening today, you left those sheep down there. You did not even confidentially ring somebody and say, you know, there's a vet needed there, there's been dogs at sheep or something. Did not make any attempt to try and get somebody to help the damage of that was actually inflicted upon the sheep. And obviously we would have had a big kill there a couple of years ago. We would have lost 22 by a husky dog. Now this dog yesterday, the owner, he would have had what we can describe as, the witness says, it was a black long-haired collie dog. And obviously he would be covered in blood, so somebody is aware of who this dog is. And obviously we're blessed in that we rang Milford Garda station, and they were so good. And they had the sergeant in Fulcara and his colleague come out to us yesterday, and they were actually there about 3:30. So this would have occurred between 10 to 2 and probably 10 to 3. And by the time I became aware of it and went down to the car park, obviously the person had fled with their dog. Yeah. But we're lucky in that we do have a community centre there that has CCTV. And we also have the school at the top of the lane, which has CCTV. But it's regardless of the cost of the death of sheep or whatnot, it's the upset of on the sheep. It's the suffering that occurred because of this. It was, you know, when I know farmers out there who'd be well aware of what it looks like when a dog destroys a sheep. And it's just not
Can
good
I talk
enough.
About that for, really... for a quick second? Because I think, and maybe people might remember the old ads, you know, that it was when you put the dog out at night that a dog would do this with other dogs, right? And maybe people thought that they just ran after them and barked them and worried the sheep, and that's where the damage was.
Yeah.
This was in broad daylight. It was one single dog. Not only did it chase the sheep, it attacked them, it did some horrendous damage to some of their sheep. Like, I think for some people listening, that's going to be an eye-opener, because maybe it's not what they thought a dog attacking sheep was. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I just wanted to re-emphasise that, Mary. This is a single dog in the middle of the day, not just chasing the animals, but viciously assaulting them as well. Horrific for you, and horrific for anyone who has to... that has to witness that, because there's the financial element of it as well. But I presume there's a bit of heritage here, a bit of lineage in these animals that are associated with your family. You know what I mean? These are not simply animals. There's much more to it from a family perspective than that, I'm sure, Mary.
Definitely, Greg. And the fact that the innocents off the sheep, because they are so familiar with us, that the minute they see you, you know, they're coming towards you for their food and for their nuts and their water. And it's just that innocence of, I just don't really think people can comprehend the idea. People are so good that you stop and say, do you mind keeping your dogs on the lead? The leads, the signs are all along there, please keep your dogs on under your control. Mm. And people are lovely. And you then have people who, you know, will eat you and will tell you that they're entitled to this, that and the other.
Well, look, we're talking about sheep here, Mary. I was on a beach not too long ago with a toddler. There were six dogs running around. I had to leave. I've no problems with dogs. I've owned dogs, don't get me wrong. But this was on a beach. Just six dogs running around, chasing each other. Big dogs, small dogs. Two dogs started fighting. You know, it was just, it felt like chaos. I don't want to exaggerate it either. I'm a big boy, don't get me wrong. But it seems that certain dog owners think they could go onto the beach, off comes the collar, and everybody loves their little pet that wouldn't harm a fly.
Yeah, and the reality is not that. The reality is, if we even look at nationally, you know, there has been dogs, family pets, much loved family animals that have attacked children. You know, it's not... it's, oh my goodness, this is something new. This is happening consistently and constantly. And the fact now that the poor sheep are heavy with lamb and they wouldn't be able to get away from a dog. And you're looking at even, we're so blessed really that the walker was out and he was able to get.
But even, sorry, the line's dropped there, but even them being, even the, what those poor sheep went through in being chased into the water. They have that that awful distress, but also then perishing because they couldn't escape the water. Do you know at this point there are sheep missing? But between lambs, unborn lambs and sheep, what is your loss in terms of, you know, how many of them, Mary?
So we're thinking that there's six sheep gone. We obviously have found the baby lamb with the broken spine. The attacked, we've found one of the sheep that were attacked and they're actually being cared for at the minute. Mm. So Greg, we actually, because they won't gather and come together, it's going to take us a few days to realise the full extent, or for the tides to kind of work with us and wash them back in again.
And presumably but those with lamb that are still alive, you don't know what impact that might have on the whole, well, the unborn lamb and the birthing process either, and even being able to engage with them. So there's still weeks of uncertainty ahead. I'm guessing, Mary, I don't know, I'm not a farmer, obviously, but that's my, I would presume that's the situation.
No, I was particularly upset last night, obviously, when we found the sheep who is due her lamb after next week, and you know how frightened and shaken she was, and her back end was you know
bitten, torn.
It was just out of her.
Yeah,
it was
horrific.
Right, so and I suppose I would just appeal that you know, please be respectful of our animals too, and please just keep your dogs on the leads. As you rightly said, Greg, these were sheep. What if that dog had gone to a child? And as you say, you cannot trust any dog, and they're so loved. You could imagine they're your family pet. But at any stage, please, 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 just keep your dogs on your leads and enjoy the beach and enjoy the beautiful scenery we have. But please be respectful and mindful that there's animals that graze here all year round, and it's their home too.
Yeah, listen, a stressful, worrying time for you. Obviously there's a financial element to this, but there is also the distress it causes.
It's the emotional, yeah. And it's to think of the pain that the sheep actually went through, and the fact that he did not alert anybody to get help, get a vet, get support, you know, nothing.
Sounds like the Gardaí have quite a bit of information to be working on, and I presume you'd encourage whoever was in control of that dog, or in fact they weren't in control of it, to come forward. Okay,
go ahead. That's perfect, Greg.
All right,
thanks
okay.
So
sorry
much
for making you having to relive that. I know it's not easy.
Not
to talk
at all.
About, but listen, we have to get the message out there because we're
Thank you, Greg.
Right, take care. Bye bye. Okay, that's Mary. As I say, I'm sorry if that upset any of you out there, but I think you understand why it's important that we platform that. Ger Deering is the Ombudsman for Public Services, and obviously very busy this morning, so we appreciate your time. Ger, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Greg. Glad to be with you today.
Right, okay. So your investigation, your office's investigation, has found an unreasonable and inflexible approach by the HSE in reimbursing patients for treatment in other countries. And I must say, Ger, we're delighted that this has been found in this part of the world, because a program like this, as you can imagine, Ger, we're speaking to people all of the time. A lot of people left with huge bills and inconvenience and what have you. So talk to me about the key findings, if that's okay.
Yes, thanks, Greg. As you mentioned, and I think it's probably particularly relevant to people in your area because there's a border very close to you, and these cross-border initiatives, these allow people to have treatment in other EU countries and indeed in the UK and Northern Ireland. So what we found were people who had entered into these schemes in good faith, who had had their treatment carried out and then sought a refund, were stymied at the last hurdle because of some, usually a technicality. For example, in some instances we found that, you know, a GP maybe had referred the person and not dated the letter, or the GP themselves didn't sign the letter and it was PP'd, you know, on their behalf by somebody in their surgery, which is a practice that often happens in business, as we know. So that person would work on the basis of that referral, have the treatment done, pay for the treatment, come back and make an application, and then at that stage found it difficult to, if not impossible, to actually get the money. Another issue that I think would be relevant, and particularly relevant in your own area, is people with pensions from another jurisdiction. So, for example, if somebody has a pension from Northern Ireland or from England, this causes certain complications in relation to the scheme. But in the early days of the scheme, the HSE didn't actually ask whether somebody had a pension from, say, the UK or from anywhere. Later, they did ask on the application form if you had a pension, but didn't explain the consequences. So here again, people actually had their treatment done, paid for the treatment, and indeed, in some instances, received reimbursement from the HSE for the treatment that they had done. And then later, the HSE discovered that perhaps they shouldn't have been entitled to it under this, the fact that they had a pension, and sought to get the money back from the person. To
okay, so we had a couple of questions on that. So if you have a small pension from Britain, for example, can you claim reimbursement from the HSE for cross-border or treatment in another country? Is that clear now?
It's not clear, Greg, but what we have asked the HSE to do is make it clear. Yeah. There isn't a yes and no answer to that question, because it has to do with the proportion of your income that comes from the other pension. But what we would say to people now is engage with the HSE and ask them in advance, point out that you have this pension and ask them what implications, if any, it will actually have.
It's scary how often it comes. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry, Gerard.
Just in relation to those people, no, but I'm just concerned those people who actually, where the HSE was seeking reimbursement from them. We engaged with the HSE and we asked them not to continue to seek reimbursement. After some engagement, the HSE agreed that they would discontinue seeking reimbursement, but they then introduced what they called a first charge. So in other words, if you try to avail of this scheme in the future, this money would be recouped that way. I'm really glad to say now that having engaged with the new CEO of the HSE, Bernard Gloucester, he has agreed to implement all 21 recommendations in this report, and that includes removal of that so-called first charge.
I could give you numerous examples of people who went to Derry or somewhere else in Northern Ireland for treatment in multiples of thousands of euro, Ger, and because they didn't get a receipt from a coffee doc, or they lost it, that their saddled with debts up to 10,000 in some cases because they can't prove they were in the hospital on that particular day, when there are a million other ways in which that could be proven. Were there any findings or anything of note in that regard? Because one listener today is facing a bill of €8,000 they can't afford. They were told they would get the money reimbursed, but because they didn't buy a cup of coffee in the coffee dock, they're stuck.
Well, Greg, yes. And in fact, it's interesting because people are not refunded for the travel. So we asked the HSE, well, why then are you asking them to prove travel? We believe it's sufficient that the person would prove that they had the surgery or the procedure and prove that they paid for it. The travel is irrelevant. And in fact, this arises quite a bit, particularly with people who are having treatment in Northern Ireland, because very often, because of the nature of the treatment, the person is either elderly, they may have cataracts, or they may have another reason why they can't drive. They have to rely on somebody else, a family member or somebody, to drive. And then that person has to produce the receipt for petrol or diesel, which they may not have, you know, they may have had a full tank on the day. These were problems that you've identified them very well, that people were encountering. And I'm glad to say one of the 21 recommendations I made is to remove that requirement for proof of travel.
Is that retrospective, Ger? In other words, can people who are now saddled with these bills in the multiples of thousands because they weren't able to prove that, will they be looked on favourably now by the HSE, or is this, in that regard, an only going forward situation?
Well, certainly the recommendations I've put in place will be implemented going forward, but I would say to those people to go back and re-engage with the HSE, because there has definitely, in my view, been a cultural change in relation to how these schemes are going to be administered and implemented. So I would say to anybody who has a question in that regard, go back and engage with the HSE. Another recommendation that I have made is that the HSE put in place a better appeals process. So I would say to people, engage with that appeals process, and if that fails, then come to our office and we'll engage. But we have significant engagement now with the HSE on all of the complaints we have on an individual basis to see, can we get a better outcome?
And finally, I don't know if it was part of the scope of the investigation, but is there a policy of frustrating people to save money? Because it feels very much like that with the pernickety stuff that's going on here. Was there a culture of purposely trying to save money to not reimburse people? Because I struggle to find any other explanation.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that was the reason. And I have to give credit where it's due, that about 5,000 people avail of the scheme and get their this various schemes. And it's important to say as well, Greg, that they're very good schemes, and I would encourage people to engage with the schemes. Of course, if people can get treatment in this jurisdiction quickly, that's the best outcome. Although there are some very specific situations where people have, you know, rare conditions and the treatment is only available abroad. But I would ask people not to be put off by what they're hearing in this report, because there is a commitment there to implement them better in the long run. And I believe a lot of people did manage to get the money, and I don't think it's the reason you're outlining. I think it was this over-bureaucratic approach to some of the applications.
And very finally, in making contact with the HSE now, I'm sure many people listening to this will, do they quote the findings of your report, or are the HSE well aware of that and maybe they'll change their approach in how they deal with people? In other words, how can we use your findings to benefit us in our discussions with the HSE?
Well, we've engaged with the HSE at the most senior level, and in fairness to Bernard Gloucester, he was only a few days in the job when he met me, and he committed to actually implementing this report and the changes that are required. So look, if people want to mention the report, that's fine. But I believe there is that change within the HSE now to implement this in the most flexible way possible and in line with the recommendations that we've made.
Well, if they don't, we'll hear all about it, Ger, no doubt, on this programme. Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, Ger Deering, Ombudsman for Public Services there. Right, okay, normally I read the weather forecast to you, but why should I in this occasion? Because we're delighted to welcome onto the programme Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. Alan, how are you getting on?
Good, thanks, Greg, very good.
Good to hear a bit of good news out of you for once. I am joking. You just say it as it is and I get that. Right, okay, so this was predicted and it's arrived. Some nice weather for the next wee while anyway.
Yes, some high pressure out to our northeast is giving us a nice break from the wet and windy weather. So plenty of sunshine over the next few days. This afternoon should get a good bit of sunshine. Tomorrow will be a little bit more cloudy, but Thursday, once any early fog or mist clears, looks like wall-to-wall sunshine. And Friday sees lots of sunshine as well. And even into Saturday, sunny spells. Now, there could be a risk of some showers on Saturday. But, yeah, a really good few days ahead. And temperatures today will get up to around 17, maybe even 18 degrees in your part of the country. And unusually, the west and the northwest will see the warmest temperatures today because we have an easterly breeze. So that'll keep the main those in the Dublin media that only report on the Dublin weather thinking it's cold, but you guys will know what the real weather is in Donegal.
Quite ominously, you stopped at Saturday. What's happening Sunday, Alan?
Well, it's going to turn cooler, and there could be a few showers around. Now, I don't think you're going to see too much rainfall, but temperatures will certainly be dropping back. And as we head through into next week, into the early days especially, there's a risk of a northerly blast. And you guys certainly know what that feels like. And the weather models are showing a real blast of cold weather could move down for the early days of next week. It's not certain yet, but it is looking increasingly likely. So if you've gardeners listening, just hold back, you know, another couple of days or a week or so, because there's a good chance of frost and the little seedlings and seeds won't like the cold weather. So don't put away the winter coat just yet. You might want to get the shorts out today, Greg, but don't put the winter coat away.
I'm not sure the world is ready for my legs. I've seen better legs hanging out of a nest, Alan. I'm not going to lie to you. But the next few days are looking good. And is this April weather we have at the moment, or is it above seasonal averages temperatures-wise?
Well, it would have been above in the last couple of days and today, but they'll drop back to about normal. So normal is about 15, 16 degrees, 14 to 16. So we're a little bit above, and we certainly were above on Sunday for the areas that got the sunshine at 21 degrees. But it is locally different as well. Like the south coast will have some sea fog and some cloud, and it might only be 11 degrees down there today. So it does vary a lot from area to area, because obviously this time of year now, the sun has good strength in it. So me, like you, will need a hat when we do go out, because the sun is strong enough to burn you. And I'm sure many people will experience sunburn over the next few days. So the sun will bring some lovely heat where it does break through, but it will also bring some sunburn.
Yeah, and be conscious of those UV levels, because it can be quite misleading. Right, that's the easy bit. What's May, June, July, August like? And will we get an Indian summer in September, Alan? That's the...
Do you want a lot of numbers as well?
Yeah, please. That would be good. Euro Millions also. Listen, brilliant, Alan. Okay, enjoy. It's nice that we're getting the better of it, and I do appreciate your recognising the fact that sometimes we struggle to get accurate weather forecasts for us up here out of Dublin. But listen, God bless you. Thanks very much, Alan. Enjoy it yourself.
Take care of yourself.
Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. You can check him out on socials, on Facebook, and particularly active on Twitter. So isn't that nice? Maybe we should get the barbecue out then. I don't know. What do you think? Caroline, is yours coming out? Yes? What time, Ant? I like potato salad and coleslaw both on the same plate, if that's okay. And a few wedges would be nice. Yeah? Okay. I think... people are going to be getting the barbecue. Why not? Do you know what? Why not? Get outside. And there's some great offers in our local butchers as well. Do you know where you can buy a whole load of stuff for a certain amount of money? You're supporting the local butcher as well, and there's often great value there as well. So, you know, why not? Hey, Greg, good on you for giving that woman plenty of airtime about the loss of her sheep. We lost over a dozen sheep to dogs in our field beside the house a few years ago. We had guards here, but no one ever was got for it. We stood the loss. I think it's time for people to lose their dogs if they're not on a lead or tied up. It's so sad what the dumb animals suffer because of dogs. And look, we always invite people to come on and talk about it. Even national programs. Let's not pretend otherwise. We don't do it, but a lot of national programs have stooges, which are people that they know, right? And they bring them on to pretend to talk about a subject. You'll have heard the slips from now and again. We're not a huge country, so not everyone wants to go on the radio because people might think they know them or what have you, of course. So it's good when someone like Mary and the rest of you that do come on and have a conversation, because it helps us to get the point across, and it means I don't have to always read it out. So I recognise that you recognise Mary coming on and having a chat with us, and of course we'll give her as much time as is required. Right, My heart goes out to that lady at the loss of all those sheep and lambs. It shows the attitude of some dog owners. Me, 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 and my dog can do whatever we want. Try to talk to them, all you'll get is abuse. Even in my case, threats of violence. Why can the people who own the dogs not have to pay for the loss of all the poor sheep and wee lambs? It's horrific what dogs do to them. Well, the owner is culpable if you can prove it. It's a case of tracking them down. I'm sure the owner of that dog is going through, you people, I'm going to get given out for here because people think sometimes I'm, but I'm sure that the owner of that dog never went to the beach with that dog with the intent of that happening, right? And maybe they're shocked at what their dog was capable of doing, and maybe it's going to take a day or two for them to process that and to come forward. But at the same time, if you have a pet that's capable of doing that to these defenceless animals, what else are they capable of as well? But I recognise that maybe they have to take some time before coming forward. The OPW have no interest in the fort, and the key holder lives near the site, but it's nothing to do with the key holder. It's not their fault, OK? I want to be clear on that. Hi, Greg. Very simple question for the council. Are dogs allowed to be off the lead? Cheers. I'm not sure where we stand in terms of the new regulations. Remember when they went out to consultation? I don't know if they're in force or not. Maybe the council will get in touch with us, or they, and we can get that information out there, because I think it's important. Councillor Michael McClafferty said, dogs attacking sheep is a very serious concern. A neighbour of mine has lost 16 sheep recently. Clearly, a better awareness campaign needs to be done to make walkers with dogs more aware of the damage their dogs can do. I understand where you're coming from. I'm not sure talking to people helps anymore. 99% of dog owners are abiding. But, you know, that 1% are the ones that are careless. That 1% of the type that will tell you to F off if you challenge them will. More awareness help? I don't know. Enforcement perhaps is the only way where we can get through it now. All right, thanks to Niamh and Caroline Orr. Caroline, who researched and produced the show as well. We really appreciate their efforts. We'll all be back with you tomorrow morning at 9, God willing. Stay safe. Enjoy the weather.